Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Welcome to the Raise Your Game Show, a podcast that unpacks and dissects the strategies and principles of high performance in sports and business. Here's your host, Alan Stein Jr.
In season one of the Raise Your Game Show, I went back to my vault and pulled out eight of my most powerful interviews ever. From the likes of Gary Vee, Kevin Durant, Mark Cuban, and Brad Stevens, and re-explored their timeless wisdom. In season two, I unpack the power of storytelling and take a deeper dive into 12 of my all-time favorite stories, six of which are signature stories I tell regularly in all of my keynotes, workshops, and trainings, and six stories which I've rarely told publicly before. I believe captivating storytelling is the most effective way to teach lessons and inspire behavior change. In this season, I hand-selected two good friends and colleagues to share their unique perspective on these stories and to get clarity on the application these lessons have in their areas of expertise. In this episode, I am joined by David DeWolf, the president and CEO of Three Pillar Global and the best-selling author of The Product Mindset: Succeed in the Digital Economy by Changing the Way Your Organization Thinks. David is one of the most prolific business leaders I've ever met. David and I are going to dissect and discuss my signature story of participating in the grueling Hell on the Hill event and why living present is a key to high performance and how this directly applies to business leadership. Let's take a listen to this story when it was performed live on stage during one of my 2019 keynotes.
Two summers ago, I had an opportunity to do a long-distance charity event with Jesse Itzler and Sarah Blakely. You guys know who Sarah Blakely is? She's the founder of Spanx, and until the recent surgence of Kylie Jenner, she was the youngest self-made female billionaire in the world, one of the sharpest human beings I've ever been around. And her husband, Jesse, is equally impressive. He's a serial entrepreneur. He's an endurance super freak. He's a speaker and an author. I mean, they make quite the power couple. And they invited 70 of us up to their home in New Fairfield, Connecticut, to run this race. And in the backyard of their home in New Fairfield, Connecticut, is a patch of grass. And that patch of grass is 85 yards long, so just short of a football field. And it's at a 40-degree slope, which is really steep. I don't know if any of you do some incline work on treadmills, but a conventional gym treadmill only goes up to 15%. And if you've ever put it up to 15% to go for a brisk stroll, you feel like you're gonna fall off the back of the earth. 15 is steep. Well, this was at 40. And our task for the day was to run up and down this 85-yard hill at a 40-degree slope 100 times. Yeah, the event was appropriately named Hell on the Hill, and that it was. I'm a basketball guy. Basketball is a starting and stopping sport. It's not a long-distance endurance sport. So the concept of long-distance endurance is something that's always been rather foreign to me. And I knew, just because Jesse put his stamp of approval on this, I knew that this was going to be a challenging event. I had no idea how challenging it was going to be. At around rep 70, give or take, I was ready to quit. Like, I just had enough. I could feel blisters underneath each big toe forming. My knees and my back were throbbing to the touch. Sorry for the visual, because you just ate, but I had some chafing going on that was just out of this world and incredibly uncomfortable. And we all have that voice inside of us. It's kind of that proverbial angel and devil, and the devil side that says, you can't do this. Why did you sign up for this? What were you thinking? Now, as those of you that know me, and those of you that maybe don't know me as well, but maybe have gotten a glimpse in the last 60 minutes, I'm a pretty positive guy. I'm wired optimistically. That negative voice does not come out very often, but when it comes out, it's loud and it's screaming. And to have that voice come out at rep 70, I was at a crossroads. Well, I was very fortunate that a very good friend of mine also was running, and we were on about the exact same pace. He's also a former basketball guy, and his name, and he often gets booze when we're in the DC area, but his name's Steve Wojciechowski, and he is a Duke basketball icon, and he's the head coach of Marquette, who I've got going all the way to the Elite Eight, if you guys want to just know that I said that. And we were on about the same pace. And I guess just to commiserate in misery, I said, "Steve, how many do you have left?" And he smiled, which really irritated me. And he said, "I've got one rep." One rep? There's no way you only have one. And then he finished his sentence. "I have one rep 30 more times." And that is the definition of living in the present moment. You don't worry about the 100. You only focus on the next rep. All you got to do is get up and down the hill one more time. You don't focus on your toes and your back and your knees and your chafing situation. You focus on your own attitude and you focus on your own effort. And I'm not very good at math, probably why I became a basketball performance coach, but even I know that you cannot get to number 100 until you go through number 71. You have to respect the process. And his friendly reminder of those three things is what allowed me to end up finishing. It took me just over 4 hours of straight running up and down this hill to be able to complete it. And the only reason I was able to do it was to be able to stay in the present moment.
That boy's good.
That's right.
He ain't lying.
And now, Alan and David will deconstruct this story and dissect the most impactful lessons.
So, David, take yourself back to the first time you heard me tell the story about Hell on the Hill and the ensuing lesson of learning to live in the present moment and focus on what you can control. Do you remember how you felt, what it made you reflect on?
Yeah, I do, because it's a powerful lesson that I think we don't live very often. It is so easy in this world to be distracted. I think of all the times that I'm at home physically present to my children, yet business is running through my head. Mm-hmm. Right. And how difficult that difficulty of, you know, as you're running with blisters, right?
Yeah.
Equating that to the difficulty of trying to sit down on the floor and play Cars and Trucks with my son. Right. And just like, oh, the struggle of, I love my son, I want to be here, but man, these 57 things are running through my head. Right. So difficult. And just that struggle.
Yeah.
And this is, quite frankly, probably the story that you tell that I struggle with the most.
Yeah. It's the one I struggle with the most
as
well.
Oh, God, you made me feel better. Thank you.
And on a daily basis. Yeah. And this is something I talk about and preach all of the time. And it's still my biggest challenge. But what I'm proud to say is I'm better at it today than I was a year ago. And I have no doubt that when you and I grab coffee a year from now, I'll be even better at it then. And it's only because I'm conscious of it.
Okay.
I'm aware of it, and I'm making a commitment to take steps to get better at it.
Have you found a single secret or two in the last year that you said, you know what, when I changed this, it got easier?
One of the biggest ones is my daily ritual of doing the Headspace meditation app in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's more from an esoteric view that allows me to start my day in a less rushed manner.
Mm-hmm.
I start my day more mindful and aware.
Yep.
I'm allowed. And now, please know, even in a 10-minute guided meditation, my mind is like a squirrel. I'll think of 20 different things just during that 10 minutes.
Yep.
But the part that I'm better at now is I have an awareness of it and I bring myself back. And Alan, you don't have to worry about the recording session you're going to do with David later today,
because
that's not now. It's not here yet. Just get back to focusing. And where I used to be oblivious to that, I can now get back to it. And the other thing that's helped a lot is, because I'm just like you, especially when my kids were younger, to sit down and play a game of chutes and ladders when I've got a pending keynote coming up is really tough for me. So what I've learned is if I need to take a few minutes to dump my thoughts and say, let me write down these few things that are in my head right now, that clears up the headspace that I can then be present for a game of chutes and ladders or on my hands and knees playing Cars. Because I know that it's not fair to my kids when I'm sitting there with this glossed over look on my face because I'm paying attention to something else.
Yeah.
And while I'm far from perfect in either of those domains, those have been two steps that have helped.
Yeah. I love that. Both very relevant for me. I've found something very similar with my morning routine. For me, it's my morning prayer time.
Mm-hmm.
And exact same thing you're talking about, the distractions come in and just layer the guilt on that. Here I am starting my day with prayer, yet I can't focus my mind on where it's supposed to be. But to be okay with that, to learn to be okay.
Yeah.
But it's amazing to me how that simple act of centering myself and having my prayer time and focusing on what's most important in my life first in the day sets the tone for the rest of the day.
So
it's amazing to me how that simple act of centering myself and having my prayer time and focusing on what's most important in my life first in the day sets the tone for the rest of the day.
I love that.
There's no doubt about that for me. The second thing that you talked about, I love it, and I'm going to start putting it into practice because I don't do that.
It's kind of a brain dump.
Is that extra brain dump, giving yourself time. Okay, yes, I'm going to go play the game. Hey, kids, while you set up the board game, I'm going to go take 5 minutes to brain dump.
Yes.
And what it reminds me of is one of the things that really helps me a lot is to get things out of my head and on paper.
Yes.
I carry a notebook around, and as soon as something pops in my mind, if I can get it out, it's almost like I get it out of my cycles, right? I don't spin on it when I know, okay, it's safe and it's over
there
on the shelf.
Security that you're not going to forget it now.
Exactly. So that helps me a lot, but I'm not deliberate like you are about doing that immediately before a game or whatever you're going to do. So I've got to try that out. And then the third thing that I've done that has helped me immensely is I have turned off all the notifications from my phone.
Yes, sir. That's powerful.
No email notifications, no text message. Like, I've just turned these things off. The phone is designed to get our attention.
Yes.
And the distraction that comes from it, it's hard enough to have it in your pocket, right? We're all creatures of habit, pulling it out and checking the email. I don't need it proactively telling me every 37 seconds that something new happened, right? And I don't know why more people don't do it. And there are times where it'll come back on and I'll have to figure out how to turn it off again, right? Because for whatever reason, I think I need it for a point in time.
Yeah.
Deleting social media from my phone. Another
huge
one, right? Like, yeah, we all have to be connected and you know, have LinkedIn or whatever, Facebook, but to remove those things, I've gotten rid of, I do not have Facebook on my phone anymore. I have LinkedIn only for business contacts, and I do post my Instagram photos sometimes, but those are the only two social media accounts I have on my phone, and I really control the usage of them, right? When I'm standing in line somewhere, I don't need to be browsing through a newsfeed, right? Because even though that's not the moment where you're trying to be present, like, who really cares if you're present in line at the grocery store? It creates this habit of always having to have something on your mind and your cycle's running, right?
And it's practice. It goes back to, if you want to get good at something, you practice. So you have to practice being present at a red light. Yeah. Practice being present when you're standing online at the grocery store. Because if you don't get those reps then it's really hard to put them into execution later. And I've adopted the same principles you just said. I do keep social media on my phone, but what I've done is I have turned off all notifications, and I have them that they can only be accessed on Wi-Fi.
Ooh,
so I can only
like
see them when I'm at home or I'm in a hotel room. So this has prevented me from the awful habit of checking them at red lights or checking them online at store, so I can't do that anymore.
I've never thought of that. I'm going to do that.
And one other thing that's helped, now that my kids are older, I have, and I know you've got a whole span of youngins, that, you know, the boys are almost 10 and my daughter will be 8, is if I'm on my phone or at my laptop and inevitably someone walks up and, Daddy, you know, I want to tell you something. I just say, let me finish what I'm working on right now, and then you'll have my full attention.
Love it.
Sometimes that's 20 seconds to finish typing a sentence.
Yep.
Sometimes it's 8 minutes I have to finish writing a blog post, but I just let them know that I'll be, as soon as I'm done this, then it's off my plate, it's out of my headspace, and you'll have my full attention. And what I've learned, and this has been a change, is I used to say, just give me a second. Just give me a second. And you know how literal kids are.
Right.
They come back 3 seconds later and are like, all right, it's been 3 seconds. Where are you? Or give me a minute, and they'll time it.
Right.
So now I just say, let me finish what I'm working on, and then I'm all yours. And
love
I found
it.
That to be super helpful. And they've understood that and they respect that. They don't take it as a slight on them that I don't love them, that I need 8 minutes to finish a blog post.
Right.
They just take it as daddy's working on something, and the moment he's done, I'll have his full attention. And I close the laptop or turn the phone over when I do that. I don't peek out
with
one eye.
I was just about to say that. Oh my gosh. So important, right? Because sometimes we'll turn to the child or to whoever we're talking to with good intent, but that laptop screen's still open or that phone's still there. Totally. You got to close it. You got to shut it down. And I think that's another key point. It's easy to talk about this because I think we can all relate to the situation at home, right?
Yes.
With the kids and those types of things.
Yeah. Let's talk about business.
This is real in the office as well.
For sure.
The number of professionals who aren't present to conversations, that don't look you in the eye, that are in meetings, on laptops, those types of things, we need to take note of this and realize that we need to be present to the conversations we're in. We need to be present to what we're doing.
Say what?
that we need to be present to the conversations we're in. We need to be present to what we're doing.
Yes.
Right? I don't know how some people do the multitasking that they do, right? They're writing a blog while they're sending an email, while they're like 37 things and having a conversation at the same time. Right.
Well, research has shown they're actually not doing any of those things to the level that they're capable of, because right, they're turning their mind on and off and switching attention from one thing to the next. And, you know, you're such a prolific leader. You always strike me as kind of the my door is always open if you need me type of person, which is one of many things I like about you. But I can see you having to implement the same thing I've done with my children here. If you're in the middle of something in your office and somebody comes up, knocks on the door because they need your expertise or attention or want to talk to you, it should be the same thing.
Yep.
Like, you should be able to finish what you're working on so that you can then give them your full attention. So being a my door is always open doesn't mean that you're at the beck and call of everyone 24/7.
Sure.
It simply means that I will make time for you to be present when we can, because you are that important to me. And
yes,
it has to be a two-way street. This
yep.
can't be someone, you know, David, you're on my beck and call, I need
yep.
you now.
Yep.
It needs to be when you're ready to give me your full attention, I would greatly appreciate it.
And I think you have to be deliberate about that, right?
Yeah.
So I'll share a couple secrets that I have.
Please.
There are days or parts of the day I won't come into the office. You will find me working at Starbucks.
Yeah.
Why? Because I actually work fairly well with noise. I don't need a quiet spot, so I don't mind Starbucks. But
okay.
more importantly, because I don't want to be in the office.
Mm.
Because I have to get something done. I need focused work, and I can't afford to be asked for that time.
Yeah.
And so when I'm in the office, I want to have the open door. I don't want to ever be in a position where I'm that door shut guy that you can't come ask me.
Yep.
But I need to be deliberate about sending those signals. And when I'm in the office with the door open, even if I'm working on something, if something's important, come talk to me.
For sure.
Right? But there are times where I won't come into the office because I know, you know what, I need an hour and a half block to get this done. And so my best work environment in that situation, so I don't stress out
yep.
about somebody else coming in, is there. And it sends a signal to them, but it also gives me peace of mind, right? Because I so want to connect with other people that if I see somebody walking by and I'm working on some, I will feel a need, right? We've got glass in all our windows. I'll feel a need to say, hey, how's it going, Katie? You know, and I need to be deliberate about that. And I've learned these types of things. It's amazing. We go back and forth from family examples to business examples.
But you can't compartmentalize life. There's so much utility between the two.
The best teacher for me as a CEO is running a family.
Of course.
And the best teacher for me as a father is running a business.
And back and forth.
You know, I do the same thing with my kids. I go to my office and shut the door when daddy needs to get some work
yes.
done.
And they know what that means.
That's right. If I have an important phone call to make, they know what my routine is, right? It gives them a safety net of, okay, that's dad's space. If I'm working, there's oftentimes I'm working in the kitchen or I'm working in the family room. Totally cool. Come ask me to help fix that truck that just broke,
yep.
right? And so I think those things relate back and forth, and we should be more cognizant of the lessons we learn in our personal lives and in our work lives and how they cross-pollinate.
Say what?
And we should be more cognizant of the lessons we learn in our personal lives and in our work lives and how they cross-pollinate.
Ah, beautiful. Let's unpack the three pillars of living present that I bring out in
yep.
that story. We'll just do them one at a time, and this won't necessarily be rapid fire, but you tell me what you think of, and then I'll tell you how that's impacted me. The concept of moving to the next play.
Yeah, next play. Forgetting what just happened, being okay with failure. Failure is a huge part of life, you know, and celebration too, but we tend to get more caught up in the failure,
yeah.
right? And really focusing on what's next and being okay with, I can't change history.
Yeah. You know, I've gotten feedback from so many people that the stickiest thing that I share during my keynote is this concept of next play.
Mm-hmm.
And it is actually something I think's probably had the most profound impact on my life
yep.
is that next play. Whether it's I do play a game of chutes and ladders and I wasn't as present as I should have, I've learned to not beat myself up and move to the next play and just say, Alan, next time you're lucky enough to spend time with your children,
yep.
be more present than you were just
right.
now. Or I always aim to do the best that I'm capable of. But of course, there'll be a time where I get off stage and go, you know what? I didn't nail that to the degree that I was capable of, or I didn't nail that as well as I would have wanted to. So I have to move to the next play. I
yep.
still learn from the experience.
Yep.
I don't discard it. And,
yep.
but I've learned how to move to that next play. And I do find myself saying that to myself dozens of times a day.
Yep. Like,
that call didn't go the way you wanted. Oh, well, next play.
Next play. And I love that every time you do it, it's Coach Williams, right?
Coach Jones.
Coach Jones.
Yes, it's a method.
He
yes.
makes the hand signal, yeah. right? Next play. My kids know that hand signal.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, mine do too.
I mean, I have taken that totally out of your book, and I have, next play, guys, next play.
And it's and this goes back to the parallel between work and home life. That
totally.
Next play can be a parenting tool, or it can be a tool to help lead those more
no
effectively.
Doubt.
The second pillar is focusing on what you can control, which is effort and attitude. What does that bring to light for you?
Yeah, so true, right? I mean, the only thing we can control is our own mentality, and it's amazing how many people don't realize that they are the ones that are in control of their emotions,
mm-hmm.
right? So often it's about what other people did to us.
Yeah.
Right. Or the circumstances out of my control or the resources I wasn't given. No. Right. It's about us.
Yeah.
It's about our attitude and our effort. It's about what we can control. And am I all in? Right.
Yeah.
And I think that is just something that we often forget because we're not deliberate about it.
Say what?
It's about our attitude and our effort. It's about what we can control. And am I all in? Right.
Yeah.
And I think that is just something that we often forget because we're not deliberate about it.
Yeah. I was a guest on a podcast recently, and the guest asked me something which was pretty profound, which is, what makes you mad? Like, he's talking to me and asked me, what makes me mad? What's kind of my pet peeves? And I say, you know, that list has narrowed significantly over the last few years because I've learned it's not that I'm immune to being angry or upset, and it's not that I'm holier than thou. It's simply I've learned to put my focus in what I control, my attitude and my effort, and I've chosen anger as a response a lot less often than I used to.
Yeah.
Perfect example, your office here in Fairfax, Virginia. I'm in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Anyone not local to the DMV, that's a 40-minute drive on a good day.
On a good day if we're lucky.
And today it was pouring rain, and there were two accidents, so I was in significant traffic. That used to drive me up a wall. That used to irritate me. And today it was, I don't control it. I sent you a text letting you know I'd be 15 minutes late. I cranked up a podcast I've been listening to, and I didn't let it dictate the rest of my day. And that's a major step forward because I've learned to now focus on those things. So the reason I say that is anger doesn't have to be a default.
Nope.
It's always a choice, and I'm choosing it less often than I used to.
And you know what I think so often is it's in these stressful moments where we make it 10 times worse. I think as you're telling that story about, I fly a lot, right? I'm on a plane like you are, right? How many times are those passengers in the delayed flight just livid with the flight attendants?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Right.
Right. It's a choice, right? It is not something that we can control. The flight attendant can't even control it, right? But it's a choice we can make to treat other people honorably and respectfully, despite the fact, you're going to miss your plane.
Yeah.
Oh, well, right?
Exactly. And how does getting angry or upset or being livid change the situation?
It makes it worse.
Yeah. It's not as if, you know what, if I act rude to the flight attendant, now the flight will all of a sudden take off. It doesn't change anything.
Right.
So it actually serves no purpose except adding stress to your own life, which is arguably the number one killer. So at the risk of being too overdramatic, when you get too upset over these little things, you're basically putting yourself in a grave earlier. You're doing the exact opposite of improving your situation.
Yep.
You're making your situation worse because you're choosing that response.
Couldn't agree more.
All right, and then the last pillar, and then we can wrap up, is to focus on the process and learn to appreciate the process. So, of course, with Hell on the Hill, I couldn't worry about doing 100 of them. I had to worry on the process of just getting it up and down one more time.
Yep. One at a time. There's no doubt. I'm not good at this one.
The process?
Yeah. I'm not a process guy by nature. But being aware that that's important.
Yeah.
You know, I, for whatever reason, I'm a big thinker. I'm a visionary, and I am always wanting to see that picture to get there. And it's the goal that gets me there. But there's something that I call the messy middle, right? When you're going after something big,
I like that
term. It's really exciting at the beginning and you've got all this energy and you can't wait to get going.
Yeah.
Then you hit this phase where it becomes rote and routine and hard. And that's what I call the messy middle.
Yeah.
And then towards the end, you can see the light at the end of the tunnel and it's like, oh yeah, we're going to make it, right? It's that messy middle where I've got to continually remind myself to step back and say, whoa, 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 whoa. It's not about the 100.
Yeah.
It's about the one. And it's not just about the one, it's about the next step.
Yeah.
Right? And just making the next step.
Say what?
It's not about the 100.
Yeah.
It's about the one. And it's not just about the one, it's about the next step.
Yeah.
Right? And just making the next step. And I think that's a critical tool, especially in that point where you don't have the energy, you don't have the vision, you are right. worn out. Writing my book.
Yes.
I had a messy middle of writing my book.
Of course.
And focusing on the process of, okay, what's next? I've just got to edit this chapter. Nope, not this chapter. I've got to edit this page.
Yes.
Right? And getting to that point, then all of a sudden, enough of those little things together, and there was the light at the end of the tunnel, and I had that energy back.
That's so cool. I've never heard the messy middle. I like that. Because the bookends are the exciting part.
Yeah.
And they are the easy part. My kids live with my ex, and they live in Bethesda, and they live in an older neighborhood. But the posh thing to do now is people buy older homes, and then they bulldoze them, and they build these really, really nice new homes in these older neighborhoods. So it's not rare for me when I'm picking the kids up or dropping them off that I'll drive by. One day I'll see an old house.
Yep.
The next day I'll see a pile of bricks. The next day I'll start to see a foundation laid.
Yep.
The next day I'll start to see the plywood start to go up, and then the bricks start to go up. And then in a couple months, it's a finished house, and I actually see somebody inside, and you're like, that is incredible. And I really enjoy watching those steps, because that's really what it is. And I can see that messy middle there. Yeah. So you know that you're getting ready to have this house built, and you're so excited.
Yep.
And then you're probably going by every day, and you're like, is this all they've done? Is this all they've done? I'm ready to move in.
Right.
And then the day that you can actually see the front door and you can see through the windows, you must be so excited that that's your home. But there's that long period in between, that messy middle that you said, that's when the house is actually being built. And that's the foundation to which the rest of the house is built. So you got to get that part right.
And it's in that messy middle where I think you have to go back to the last point we talked about, which is that's when you have to control your emotions.
Mm.
Because that's when typically we begin to read bad intent in others.
Yeah.
It's when we typically begin to get angry or sour or tired or frustrated. And I can choose those things.
Yes.
I can choose to interpret people's actions as bad intent, or I can assume they have the best intent in mind.
Yeah.
I can choose whether I get frustrated that I'm stuck in the mud in the messy middle, or if I'm going to delight in the process and the fact that I get to actually do this, right? Just the words we use, I have to versus I get to, right?
So big.
I got to write a book. I didn't have to write a book.
No.
Nobody forced me. I got to. How cool is that?
Yeah.
Even in the messy middle, right? And so I think that's where these principles start to intertwine that you're talking about, and one influences the next to help you go, next play.
For sure. And I think that's what we can put a big bow tie on, is these, they may seem like individual silos and pillars, but they're all.
If you'd like to read about this signature story
on the next
in
play
my book,
is highly
Raise Your
correlated
Game,
with your
you can order a team
on
set
your
for
your
everyone
attitude
in your organization.
And in order to focus on the process,
I can even offer you a 40%
you have to be able to have
discount
that mindset
and
those
can
things
sign
in place.
Each copy.
No doubt.
And if you really want to raise your game, you should check out my new facilitator guidebook and team member workbook. Two reinforcement resources to help guide your team to higher performance. Just visit raiseyourgamebook.com or email me directly at alan@allensteinjr.com for more info or to order now. Well, that's it from me. I hope this has helped you raise your game.